We are holding on Chof Ches on the Bay's last line, last Mishnah. Okay, we had a couple of Mishnahs ago on Amud Aleph. We had a Mishnah about somebody who's not a mumcha, checked, not certified as an expert to be able to check Bechorim and for Mumim, and he did, and it turns out that therefore it was wrong, the Bechor shouldn't have been checked. So we said the Bechor is also. We had Rav Meir versus Rav Yehuda in all cases, and only in some cases. Anyway, that let us. The halacha is like we said, we have a machlokas, we're showing you who the halacha is like. Anyway, that led us into a series of mishnayos, which we had the next couple of mishnayos, including this one, including the next one, about related topics, about people who are unqualified or people who are qualified but are doing something who are taking a fee for their service, checking bechorim. So the Mishnah says, "Hanotel schar liyasroyas habachoris." If somebody gets paid to see bachoris and look and see if they have a mum, ein shechtin apiv. You're not allowed to shecht based on his what he says, because maybe he's only being matirit because he's getting paid for it. Elim kein hoya mumcha ke'ila biyavna, unless he's a known expert like Ila, that was his name, in Yavna. What was so special about Ila? You have a couple of different explanations. Rashi says he was a chassid, so therefore he's not suspect, therefore, of doing something like that, of being matirit inappropriately. Tosis points out, even still, the Gemara is going to point out, actually, there are certain rules that we put in place to prevent that even somebody like Ila is not going to be suspect. So we see that even though he's a chassid, we still have to try as much as possible to make it to be obviously above board. But anyway, that's one explanation, is what Ila was special, is that he was a chassid. We have other explanations, including... He was a person who acts with nimshu rafadin, and whereas he's not the kind of person who's suspect of doing like that to be inappropriately master just for his feet.
The chassid is
the din, yes, yeah.
So
that's one explanation of what was so special about Ila. Another explanation is the Rambam says basically that there was nobody else of his caliber. And the Ramban mentions that there's also
in terms of expertise.
And the Ramban brings another point also, which we're going to see something along. So we're going to see something along those lines in connection with the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it. That basically it was a full time thing for him. He was always busy. People are always bringing him bechoros, and therefore if he couldn't get paid for it. He didn't grow them. He was the expert that people would bring him a bechor to see does it have a mum. This defect in it doesn't have a mum. So according to Ramban, the issue is therefore the reason why the Chachamim allowed for him to be paid is because it was a full time thing for him. People are always interrupting him from whatever else he's doing to come and bring him bechoros, and if he couldn't get paid, he wouldn't be able to earn a living. So whatever it is, so she tirloi be Yavne Chachamim. So the Chachamim in Yavne, or the Chachamim in general, were matter him. Lias Noitel Arba Isoris were behind a Daka Bashishal Agasa. The Chachamim allowed the Sila to take a fee of 4 Isar for checking a Behemoth Daka, a sheep or a goat, Bashishal Agasa, or 6 Isaris for a Behemoth Gasa, an Isar is not meaning that much. An Isar is, you have eight purses to the Isar. No, an Isar is far less than a goat. There's a table in Masechta Kiddushin that gives the exact things. I don't remember exactly, but whatever it is, you have 8 purchase to the Isser. You have 8 purchase to the Isser, and you have, for comparison, you have 700 and some purchase to the Sela. So you're talking when an Isser is like 1/100th of a Sela, approximately.
Okay.
I don't know what it would be in terms of, yeah. Whatever it is, it wasn't a lot. It wasn't a lot, but
it's
a prota is a small, yeah.
So it's a
sentence. Okay, so in modern terms, it would be whatever. I mean, you can't really buy anything with 1 cent anymore. To get an idea. Okay, so if you want to call it then an Isser is 8 cents, fine. So you're talking 32 cents, or you're talking 32 cents or 48 cents, respectively. Okay, if you want to think of it like that.
32 cents is...
32 is 4 Isser, 6 Isser would be 48. 48 purchase. Okay, so 4 Isser for a small animal, 6 Isser for a large animal, Ben Tam or Ben Balmum, whether he told them, whether after he checked it, he said it's a Tam or Balmum, that was the fee that they paid him, and the Chachamim allowed it. For these reasons, again, either because it was a chassid, or because it was nobody of his caliber and expertise, or because it was a full-time thing for him.
Was it crying?
No. Not necessarily. It doesn't have to be a cartoon to check it. Okay. So the Gemara says, first of all, why the difference? Why 4 versus 6 is there? My timer. The reason is high nopish tircha, v'hayla nopish tircha. Because it's a small animal, it's not so much tircha. When you have to get it down onto the ground and tie it up and check for the mum, with a small animal, it's much easier to do that. With a large animal, it's much harder. Therefore he charged more. Well, you have to check wherever the mum is, but the point is that there with a large animal, you have to get it down, you have to knock it down, you have to throw it down onto the ground, you have to tie it up, you have to immobilize it, whatever. So exactly. Then we said ben tam or ben balmum. We said he charged the same fee whether the animal turns out to be a tam or a balmum. So the Gemara says, why is he? So the question is, the premise of the question is, why is he charging the same amount in both cases? If the animal comes out to be a balmum, good, then the person is gaining from it because now he can shecht and eat it. But if it turns out to be a tam, maybe he ought to be charging less, or maybe he ought not to be charging at all. So b'shlema balmum, I can understand if the animal turns out to be a balmum, then the reason that he should charge mishum b'kashori, because he's being matir, so now he's performed a service for the guy. El tam amai, but why is he charging? Why is he charging if it's a, why is he charging for the tam after all? Well, okay, but I mean, fine, yeah, but the point is, on the face of it, he didn't accomplish anything for them because he's still saying it's osur. So why is he charging? The answer is the imkain osila mechshadeh, because otherwise people would suspect him if he says the malmum, the amri hai balmum tamu, people would suspect. And again, even with Ila, we still have to try and make things as above suspicion as possible. People might think that really this that he said is a balmum, really the animal is a tam, the hai de kashorile, and the only reason why Ila is being matirit, mishum agra, is in order to get his feet. So to avoid that, we have him charge the same amount for a tam or a balmum, and that way, whether he says the tam or whether he says the balmum, we know he's not doing it in order to collect his 4 or 6. If he only charged for a balmum, then he would have an incentive, or people would think he had an incentive to call it a balmum even when it's really not. Okay, the problem with that is ihafi. If so, you still haven't dealt with all the possibilities. Tamnami. So even if he says the animal is a tam and he's collecting his fee. Amri, people are going to suspect him. Hi, balmum hu, that maybe the animal really is a balmum. V'hai deloy koshorile, so why is he not being accurate? Sova, because he's thinking, t'yeche delishkel agri zimna achriti, because then he can collect for it again. He has an incentive, then the opposite. He might declare the animal a tam, and that way the guy's going to bring it to him again and again, and each time he can collect his 4 or 6 isis. So how do we deal with that? The answer is chad zimna takinu le'rabbanon. The answer is the chachamim made a takana that he only does it once. Shrei zimni lo takinu le'rabbanon. The rabbanon did not make a takana that he does it twice. Now, what does that mean? So what does that mean? So Tosfos learns that what it means is he's not required to check it again. Given that he's only getting the fee for it one time, then he's not required. Then he's not required to check it again. So he can tell the person, I'm sorry, I already checked it once. Go take it to somebody else. So the Chum did not require, according to Tosfos, the Chum did not require him to see it again. If he does, then he can't collect for it again, because again, you people are going to suspect that maybe he declared it a tam the first time in order to be able to eat. Apparently, well, I don't know. You had a lot of animals. People had a lot of bechorim. I mean, what does it say? It says Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah alone, and the Gemara says in Shabbos had every year mice the behemoth from his flock, from his herd were 12,000 animals. So, okay, he was very rich. Okay, the point is there's a lot of bechorim in his herds also. But your average person also. I mean, between there were a lot of Jews in Eretz Yisrael in those times, and most of them raised animals. And so you could have enough bechorim. But anyway. That's how Tosfos learns. However, the Rambam learns differently, which is that not necessarily. There's no particular thing that he shouldn't check it again and again, but he's only collecting the fee one time. So he's collecting the fee one time per animal. So maybe he's obligated to check again, but whatever the case, the next time he checks, he's obligated to do it for free because of this reason, because we don't want people to suspect that he's saying it's a tam in order to get the fee again and again. So if we have that kind of arrangement, then he's allowed to. Okay, because the Beis Din figured he can charge the people who are bringing in the behemoths. Why?
Well, then he's got a conflict of interest.
No, why does he have a conflict of interest? Again, the point is he's charging the same for a tam or a balmum, and he's only according to Tosfos, he's only obligated to check it the one time, and according to the Rambam, he's only allowed to collect his fee for any particular animal one time, so therefore there's no conflict of interest. Okay. So the Mishnah says, now talking more generally, so we talked about taking a fee to check the charis. Now let's talk more generally about other areas in halacha where you're not supposed to take a fee for something. So the Mishnah says, Hanotel schore lodun, if a person takes a fee in order to judge a din Torah, dina v'telim, his dinim are bustle. And in fact, when we say dina v'telim, yeah, well, so we're going to see in the Gemara there's a reason why you're not allowed to teach Torah for payment but it's a similar kind of idea. We'll see. But the point is, right, so you're asking if it's Dirabanon. I don't know if it's Daraisa or Dirabanon. It may be only Dirabanon. Tosfos says that actually, we're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to see at the end of the Mishnah, and we're going to see in the Gemara that if you have Schar Batola, if the person is taking time off where he could have been doing something else where he could have been doing some other kind of work, but he's taking off time to judge a din Torah, such a thing is allowed. So we'll see in the Gemara, we'll see some parameters about that in the Gemara. But here we're talking about where he's taking a fee where that's not the case. So the din of Talim, so his judgments are bottle, and in fact some of the Mephoroshim say it means not just this one din, but in general all the din of Torah that he judged up until this point are all considered suspect.
If he takes from both parties.
They were talking about from both parties, obviously, if he takes only from one party. Because if he takes from only one party, yeah, because we're not even talking about a matter of bias. It's a matter of that you're not allowed to take money to judge a din Torah. As the same way as the Gemara is going to say, you're not allowed to take money in order to teach Torah. However, we will let's learn the Mishnah and let's learn the beginning of the Gemara, and we'll talk about there is a great deal of discussion about this because there are various loopholes. The fact of the matter is, nowadays, Dayanim do get paid. The fact is, teachers of Torah usually get paid. So we'll talk about how that fits with what we're saying in the Mishnah and what we're saying in the Gemara. But okay, Lahoid. Similarly, if a person takes a fee in order to give Eidus, Eidus of Betalim, then his testimonies are bottled. Lahazus Lakadish, similarly, if a person takes a fee in order to sprinkle paradrama water on a person or on a Kaili, a Tomei, Lahoid means to give Eidus, that he gets paid.
To give Eidus can mean to give circumstantial evidence?
No, we're talking about real Eidus. Not expert, there's no such thing as expert aegis. And we're talking about plain and simple. In other words, that on the surface, what we're talking about is, for example, that to witness. For example, Reuben is lending Shimon money. He wants witnesses for the purpose. So he pays witnesses to watch it and then to come to Beis Din and testify on his behalf. So we're saying aegis of Talim, his testimony is vaulted. Lahazus Lakadish, if a person charges money to sprinkle paradrum water or to be Makadish, to mix the ashes of the paradrum with water, also no good. Meim of Meimara, his water is like water from a cave, which means, in other words, it's not spring water, it's tofu. Okay, you don't need a kohen to sprinkle paradrum water. Anybody can sprinkle paradrum water. This has to be a tahor person. If a person is charging to do this hazah or to do this kiddush, then meim of meimara, his water is considered like water from a cave. In other words, it's not valid for paradroma because it has to be spring water. It has to be from a fresh. It has to be fresh spring water. And in fact, some of the Mephoroshim also say cave water in those times, cave water is usually very stagnant. So it's a way of like making fun of him and saying like you think you have this pure, clear water and really it's like stagnant water and it's worthless. The Ephraim Mikla and the ashes that he's using are like ashes from a regular burnt thing. In other words, they're possible. Im Hoyakoyan, however, suppose that this person is going to be seeing the Bechor and looking for the Mum, or the Dayan, or the Aid, etc. Suppose that they are a Kohen, and... Okay, whatever. Im Hoya, in each of these cases, if he was a Kohen, and it happened that in order to go and see the Bechor, or in order to judge the Din Torah, or whatever, Mitam Ehu, Mitrumasai, and it happens as a result of that, In the course of going to check the Bechor or whatever, he's going to have to become Tomei, which therefore he's losing out, because as long as he's Tomei, he can't eat Truma, and Truma costs less than Cholim, so then he has an actual monetary loss, so he's entitled to compensation for that. machiloid, then the person who wants him to do the job, to check the bechor or judge the dintara or whatever, can give him food, umashkoi, and he can give him drink, vasachoi, and he can give him oil to smear on his skin, which is a normal thing they did in those days. Because again, all those things, usually a kohen would be able to use truma for those purposes, which is cheaper than cholin. And like this, during the time, he's Tomei, he can't do that, and he has to pay more for these things, so therefore the guy that is having him do the job compensates him for those expenses. I mean, how long can you keep it trimmer? Indefinitely, I guess. But yeah.
So you can...
No, but the point is, during that time, he has to eat, he has to drink, he has to smear oil on his skin, and he can't use trimmer during that time.
That's
the point. It's an opportunity cost, you know, during that week or during that, however long it is, that he's trimmer, he's going to have to eat cholin, which costs more. So therefore, he can be compensated for that. Similarly, if the person is old, not necessarily a kohen, just anybody, even if he's Yisrael, if he's old and he can't walk, then the person who needs him to do the job can give him a ride on a donkey, and he can pay him like a worker, which we'll see in the Gemara what that means exactly. That basically, you can compensate him for his lost income that he's losing during the time he's doing. The Gemara starts off, Menahani Mili. Where do we see this from, that a person is not allowed to take money for judging a din Torah and so forth? So, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, because the Pasuk says, Re'eli Madi Efkan B'Gemar. The Pasuk says, Moshe says to the Jewish people, see that I have taught you a Chukim and Mishpatim. Meaning that what is Moshe saying that I taught you? It means mani bechinam, apatem bechinam. Just like I'm for free, so you're for free. The two explanations among Mephoshim what it means. One is that it means that Moshe wasn't charged by Hashem, because Hashem didn't charge him for teaching him Torah, obviously, because he can't pay Hashem, and therefore the same way Moshe didn't charge for teaching the Jewish people. The other way is that the Jewish people didn't pay Moshe for him to teach them, and therefore you're not allowed to have somebody else pay you for whatever it is. The mani b'chinam, afakem b'chinam. And once we're applying that to teaching Torah, then we apply it also to these various cases that we're talking about in our Mishnah, for example, judging Dinei Torah. Again, Tosfos points out over here that obviously a dayan can't take money when it's sheichah, when it's a bribe, but we're talking about over here where he's taking it. He's taking it as payment for his chayr tircha, for the trouble that he's going to, that you're not allowed to do. Now, what he is allowed to do, again, is agar batola. If it's a full-time thing, for example, that is his source of income, because that's the only thing he does all day, is judge Dinei Torah, then that's different. Tosfos mentions in Ksubos, for example, it mentions Dayonik Zedus, Shavir Shalayim, that were paid a salary out of the treasury of the Beis Mikdash. Let's finish the piece of Gemara, and then again we'll talk about a little more about that whole concept of when we pay and when we don't. Okay. Tani Nami Hochi, we learned similarly in Ebraisa. The Pasuk continues over there, Kasher Sivani Hashem Alekoi, as Hashem commanded me, says Moshe. Same thing, Mani Bechinam, Afakem Bechinam, just like I learned for free, so you have to learn, so just like I taught for free, you have to teach for free. But how do we know, continues the Braisa, that if a person can't find somebody to learn from for free, that he should learn even for pay, that he should be willing to pay somebody to teach him Torah? Therefore, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, buy truth. So even the truth of Torah, even if you have to buy it, even if you have to spend money on it, it's worthwhile. But how do we know then that the person shouldn't say, Kishem Shalomadtiya Biskar, Kach Alam Dena Biskar? Okay, well, I have to pay money to teach, to learn, so therefore now that I'm able to teach, I'll charge money. How do we know we shouldn't do that? Tamad Laimar. Therefore, the Pasuk says, the continuation of that Pasuk, Emes Knei Ba'al Timker, buy truth, but don't sell it. So even if you yourself were in a position where you had to buy the truth of Torah because there was nobody available to teach you for free, don't turn around and sell it to others. You go and teach other people for free the way you're supposed to. It's interesting, actually. So now, first of all, so Tosfos mentions over here the heter. How do we have a heter that usually nowadays people do charge for teaching Torah? So Tosfos says because first of all, again, if it's a full time thing, he has no other income, and he's doing it full time, then it's allowed. And even if he has some other income, then fine. Chai batolah. So it goes back to you were talking with me last week or 2 weeks ago about this notion of yours. So this bears on it. this whole thing that you were talking about setting up a thing for teaching Torah or whatever. Yeah. So okay, the Torah says over here that if a person, even if a person has some other source of parnasa, but he's setting aside that work and then taking time out to teach Torah, so then fine, that can be considered also schar batala. He's entitled to pay for the fact that he could have been working, that he could have been doing some other work. Schar batala means compensation for his time, basically, because like this, he could. In other words, there's a difference between schar tircha, paying him for his trouble, which that you're not necessarily allowed to do, versus paying him for his time, where during that time he could have been having some other gainful employment. So if, let's say, we're talking about a person who...
Opportunity cost,
basically, right. So if we're talking about a person who wasn't going to be doing anything else during that time anyway, then no, right. So that's the heter that we have.
So in
my case, okay, I don't know, we'll talk about it afterwards, but that's yeah. Let's stick to the Gemara and the basic halacha over here, but yeah. So there is that. I mean, there is also actually the Gemara talks about Nedarim. There's a difference between charging for Torah Shabbat Sab versus Torah Shabbat Peh. There's a difference in that regard. So if I remember correctly, it says over there that Torah Shabbat Sab was less of a heter, but Torah Shabbat Peh, there's more leeway. But there's also, I mean, for example, when you have, let's say, teachers of kids. In the schools and whatever, but they're also, I mean, first of all, they're being paid again because, you know, that is their full-time job, and Torah is saying over here that's allowed. Second of all, there is also the point, they're being paid to watch the kids. So that's another heter also. Torah just mentions that over here. So there is all that. As far as what we're saying over here, as far as charging for judging a din Torah, it's interesting. Bartanura on this Mishnah. Now, usually Bartanura is very no nonsense. Let's explain the Mishnah. Let's explain what the halacha is. Over here, the Bartanura digresses and then gives a whole. And he says among the rabbanim of Ashkenaz, I've seen a terrible thing that they charge. He himself was from Italy, actually. The Italians were a community of their own. You had a lot of Ashkenazim, you had a lot of Sardim among them, but the Bartanura himself, I don't know what his original extraction is, but whatever. He was from Italy. I don't know how far back his family went in Italy. Whatever. He complains in his Pirush on this Mishnah. So he writes very, very shortly. What does he say over here? Here, let's see. He says, among the Rabbonim of Ashkenaz, I've seen a horrible thing in this connection, that a Rav, a Rosh Hashiva, will not be embarrassed to take a fee of 10 gold coins to take a half hour to write and deliver one single get, and the Edim will get two gold coins, or at least one gold coin. One second. It's Lodur, and we're talking about our mission to judge. Okay, so one second. So the Bartanura says very sharply, such a rov, as far as I'm concerned, is a gazlan and an anus, he says. He knows that nobody can give a guest in the city without his permission, and therefore, he has them over a barrel. He can have them do whatever they want, and I'm choshish that such a guest should be possible, says the Bartanura. Absolutely blistering thing. Comes the Ramah, who was a generation later, and writes in the Seder, I guess, in Evna Ezer. You have a section over there where you have the whole details of how exactly a get should be written and delivered.
The Bartanura
was in the late 14, early 1500s. Towards the end of his life, in the late 1400s, he moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he lived there the rest of his life. He was nifter around 1500. Originally his family was from the city of Bartanura. That's where he gets his last name, Bartanura. I believe at one point he lived in Rome, I think maybe in one point in Bologna, I don't remember exactly, anyway, whatever, and he lived in here and there in Italy, and then eventually he moved out to Israel. Anyway, in the generation or two after him, the Ramah writes in the Seder, I guess, Ebenezer, he says, relax, not so fast. First of all, a get is not really a case of judging a din Torah, like we're talking about over here. It's more like teaching Torah, and teaching Torah, Tosfos is already saying over here, you have a kavan for it. In fact, the Tiferes Yisrael goes even further. It's not even really a din Torah, per se. It's just making sure that everything is done correctly. As far as the Edim, he makes a distinction that there's a difference between whether, when we say over here that a person is not allowed to be paid for being an aide, we're talking about there's a difference between whether we're paying them to actually come to Beis Din after they already saw the thing versus to be there in the first place to be an aide on the get. That you're allowed to pay them for. So all the acronyms bring what the Barcha Nota says, but they, many of them argue with him on various grounds. So the fact is, that is the widespread meaning, because Rabban do charge for being the father of death, and Adam do charge for that's the kind of thing how it works. So that's the kind of thing how it works.
So the halacha
is, I mean, so you have the Ramah, and you have the Ramah saying that it's allowed, that the Ramah says basically, you don't have to worry so much about what the what the Bar Tanura is saying. Okay, I don't know. I believe you have Tzadishah. You have Tzadishah Chachamim who talk about it as well. I don't remember what they say, but whatever. I wouldn't say it's necessarily true that the Tzadim never follow the Ramah. Here you have, there's a Seder, I guess, in Shulchan Aruch, in Eben Ezer, after Simon Kuf Nun Dalad, you have Seder, I guess, which is the details of the step-by-step, how the writing and giving of a get should be accomplished. As far as I know, most of it is accepted by Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. I believe it was written by the Ramah. Oh, actually, I don't know. You have a Seder, I guess, over there, and then you have Hagoyis on it. So the Hagoyis are from the Ramah. The body of it mostly comes from Seder Mahari Margolius, but who actually wrote it, I don't know what to say. So the Ramah mentions in that connection. So the body of the Seder, I guess, says that if the Sofer or the Chacham is taking a lot of power, yesh omrim that the Edom shouldn't be relatives of theirs, and the Bar Tanura complains about these people who take a big pay, and then Ramah says v'lo nagu kamosa gam taima in ikum. He says his reason that he's comparing it to a din is nothing really, because he's saying, because after all, a Seder, I guess, is not really a din, it's limud ba'alma. And as far as the Edom, again, you have there's a difference, because you're asking the Edom to be present there to begin with, and that's a little bit different. Such a thing is mutter. It would be one thing if they were there already, and then they're charging to actually go and testify in Beis Din. That would be a problem. If you're calling them to be there in the first place, then it's mutter. Yeah. What the Ramah says, sorry, is he says something else, actually. What it is usually, but when they write a guest, they usually make a precondition with the Edim, that if in the course of signing the get, remember the Edim themselves are not experts at writing or signing the get, so if they accidentally mess it up, they have to pay for a new get to be written. Let's say they sign it badly, and therefore, you know, so on that ground, then, so that's one reason why they're allowed to be paid. That's the Ramah writes that. Okay, fine. Then we said lahazus or lekadish, that if a person charges money to sprinkle part of the water, or to be mekadish it, to put the ashes into the water, name of name ara efrei from mikvah. So we said his water is like water from a cave; it's worthless. And the ashes is like efrei mikvah, is like burnt ashes, like regular burnt ashes, also worthless. So the Gemara says, "Wait a minute, I have a contradiction to that." A Mishnah in Masechta Kedushin says, "Hamakadosh v'mei chatos be'efer chatos." If a man is makadosh a woman with the water of the paradrama, or with efer chatos with the ashes, harizim ukudeshes. Afal pishu hu yisrael, even though he is yisrael, and usually these things would be done by kohenim, but nevertheless, so Rashi says that even though he's yisrael, and usually the kohenim who are involved with paradrama, with sprinkling, with the kaddish and sprinkling paradrama, nevertheless it's allowed. Tosfos says that's not the reason it mentions harizim yisrael, afal pishu yisrael. The reason is because earlier in that same Mishnah, it mentions that if he's makadish with truma, then it works only if he's a kohen. So therefore we're saying here with part adroma it's not like that, even if he's Israel. Because part adroma anybody can sprinkle it. Anyway, the point is, how does this so how is the Gemara showing the contradiction over here? So Rashi understands that what it means is Mepashtus, we're not talking about that he's Mekadesh her with the actual water itself or the actual ashes themselves, because those don't necessarily have a monetary value, and we know you have to be Mekadesh with a Shavah Kotah. Mepashtus, what it means is that he's being Mekadesh her with the fact that she would have needed that she would have needed water filled up, or she would have needed Paradrumas ashes sprinkled on her, and he would have charged for it, and instead he's giving it to her, he's doing that service for her for free, and therefore it comes out that you're allowed to charge for it. So what is our Mishnah saying? That you're not allowed to charge for it. The answer is, Omer Abaya, Loikasha, Kandiskar Havo'o Milri, Kandiskar Hazov Kiddush. There's a difference between, you're allowed to charge for bringing the water from one place to another, and you're allowed to charge for filling up the container of water. Or no, Havo'o actually doesn't mean the water necessarily. Havo'o means bringing the ashes. The Paradrama, of course, is burnt outside Yerushalayim, but you could have a person anywhere in Eretz Yisrael with Tomei and these Paradrama ashes and Paradrama water sprinkled on them. They have to travel from point A to point B. You have to take ashes. You have to take ashes from Yerushalayim to someplace else. That kind of thing you can charge for. And the same thing in Milui, filling up a container of water, a container of Mayim Chaim, that you're allowed to charge for. And that's the kind of thing that you can use, that you can be Makadish, that you can be Makadish a woman with that type. As opposed to that, when we're saying that you're not allowed to is you're not allowed to charge for the actual hazah, for the actual sprinkling, or for the actual kiddush, for the actual putting the ashes into the water. That kind of thing you're not allowed to charge for.
The transporting the
ashes from point A to point B, or filling up the water, even if you don't have to travel for it, then that you're allowed to do that. Dekanami, in fact, the Gemara says, yeah, you can see that more clearly from the words of the Mishnah. Dekatani ha'ocha lahazis of the Kaddish, because in our Mishnah it says, if the person is charging lahazis of the Kaddish to sprinkle or to be Makadish, and you're not allowed to do that, v'hofen katani, I'm Makadish b'mei chatas of eifer chatas. Whereas over there, he uses the expression that he's Makadish with the water of chatas, which can be understood as being the schar of filling up the water over eifer chatas, or with the ashes of the chatas, implying
transporting.
In the transporting of them, right. There was a different, Shmaminoff, so that proves it. But Amman actually understands it a little bit differently, which is that we could be talking about that the person is Makadish with the actual water or the actual ashes, with the idea being, in other words, that... the idea is he gives it to the woman. In other words, that he's saying, same idea. She would have had to pay somebody else to bring the water or the ashes over here. So instead he's giving it to her for food. The Ravid actually disagrees and then learns more like Rashi over here, that we're talking about the pay that he would be paid for transporting the ashes or transporting the water.
The money,
in other words, not the ashes or the water themselves. Okay. Anyway, so that's the point. You're allowed to charge for that kind of thing. You're just not allowed to charge for the actual kiddush or the actual hazah. Then we said in the Mishnah, Im Hayakoyin, we said that suppose the person who you want to check your Bechor or judge your Din Torah or what have you is a Koyin, and the case is Mitam Ehu Mitrumase Fuller. Suppose the case is that in order for him to get to where you need him to, he has to become Tomei, and thereby he's barred from eating Truma for a period of time. Then you're allowed to reimburse him for that. He's allowed to be reimbursed for that because that's an actual loss that he's suffering. Because now he's obligated to buy Cholin, that's more expensive, exactly. So the question is, if you're talking about that the Koyan has to get there and he's going to become Tomei on the way, then how is he Bechlal allowed to go? Forget about the question of whether the other guy is going to reimburse him for the fact that he became Tomei. How is the Koyan allowed to go someplace where he's going to become Tomei in the first place? So we're talking about, in other words, that we're talking about that the road, let's say, a guy comes to a Koyan and he says, you're an expert, please come and check my Bechor, but the road between here and there happens to run over some graves and you're going to become Tomei. So the Koyan should tell him, what are you talking about? I can't go over a road that has graves in it. Fine, that's the word of the pastures we're talking about. It's the only way. So how is the Koyan going in the first place such that he will become Tomei and have to be reimbursed? The answer is Lebesa Pras did Abonim. We can be talking about that the road leads to a Besa Pras where the Tuma of it is only did Abonim. A Besa Pras, we've learned of before, is a field where there was a grave in it and then somebody plowed up the field where the Abonim were concerned that fragments of bone may have been scattered around the field up to 100 amas away from the grave. So 100 amas in each direction from the grave is called a Besa Pras. And but the whole concept that you're not allowed to walk, that a Kohen is not allowed to go in such a place is only Dirabon. Amr of Yehuda, Amr Rav, and in fact we see that Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Minapeach Odom Beis HaPras V'Holech. A person is allowed to walk through a Beis HaPras bending down and blowing as he goes. Because what's the concern? Blowing. In other words, like this. When you have a Beis HaPras, the concern is not that there are going to be actual, like, large pieces of the skeleton around that would be Matame Ba'oil. The concern is that the plow may have broken up the bones into small pieces, where as long as any of those pieces is at least the size of a grain of barley, then it's going to be Matame a person who touches it or carries it. Okay, so therefore, so what Rav Yehuda is telling us is,
in the Rambam,
it's Rambam. No, this is a Rambam. This is basic. This is a Mishnah and all this. This is a basic concept throughout Shastra. And the Tzoyra is Matama. So, okay, but it's not Matama Ba'oil. So therefore, so what you can do is, so the guy can be walking bent down. No, he can be walking through this basic grass, bent down, and as he goes, each time before he takes a step, he gives a puff of breath onto the loose dirt in front of him. And if there's...
Wait.
Okay, he'll go slowly, but he can still go. So therefore, what he does is, therefore, if when he blows, so he'll blow away the loose dust. If there is an etzem kesa'ur over there, he'll see it, and he'll know to avoid it. He'll know to step over it or around it.
With a stick or something that's not a couple too much.
Well, the problem is that then there's master. The problem is that then if he ends up moving a bone, then he's master. He's still carrying it. So that's no good.
No, he's pushing it.
No, but there's still master in place.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. The point is, in other words, him moving it around with a stick amounts to carrying it.
Mm.
Yeah. So therefore, what he can do is midakeach. He can go and he can go and blow as he's going, and that way. No, because there he's moving it with his breath. That's different. That's not full master. So actually, Rashi over here mentions the idea that this way any fragment of bone like that will also get blown to the side, and therefore he won't step on it. In other places, Rashi explains a little bit differently that this way the bone, the little fragment of bone, will get uncovered from the dust that might be covering it, and then he'll see it and know to step around it. Whatever. The point is, a person can go through a base of press like that. Mind you, the Gemara does mention, and Rashi brings it over here, usually you're not allowed to do that. Again, midaraisa, since the base of pras is not tomei anyway, then you're allowed to do that. Then you can go through there to begin with. Midrabanan, we usually say you can't. Therefore, this kohen is not going to be able to eat truma. But for example, we allow it for a person who's on his way, let's say, to bring a korban pesach. If the only road that he has to go to Yerushalayim to bring a korban pesach passes through a base of pras, we allow him to do such a thing. We allow him to be menakeach and trust that that'll prevent him from touching any fragments of bone. So by the same logic over here, we can be talking about that the Kohen can be walking through this Beis HaPras to get to where the Bechor is, or where the Gittorah is, or what have you, blowing as he goes. Still, Midrabanan, he will not be allowed to eat Truma. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Therefore, they have to be reimbursed for his opportunity cost, for the fact that he can't eat Truma during the next week after that. But nevertheless, he's still allowed to walk through there.
Midaraisa he could,
and therefore Midrabanan will allow him to, just as we do for a person who's going to be bringing a korban pesach, for example. However, he is going to still be tomei Midrabanan and have to be sprinkled with powdered aldrama water, and therefore for that week he's not going to be able to eat truma.
Now, in the case of the concentration camp, there's always over there pieces of bone. So we say the Kohen cannot go there.
It's very possible. I don't know. I actually don't know what the dinim are. I mean, it's also possible that any pieces of bone that are still there are less than a tesoira. If they're less than a barley grain in size, then they don't matter as far as
term
is concerned. I really don't know that.
And they have to be hardly deep in the ground.
No. Again, if they're deep in the ground and you just can't touch them and you don't carry them, you don't have a problem. It's only if they're on the surface.
If they're carried, that's what
if they're
problem.
Touched or carried, then the person, then they're right. Okay, Tosfos has a long discussion over here and understands the Gemara a little bit differently. We're not necessarily saying that the Gemara is making a separate statement. The Gemara is saying Beis HaPras is only Dirabanan, and then the Gemara is saying, by the way, once we're mentioning that a Beis HaPras is Dirabanan, and therefore Tosfos learns that it means the Kohen would be able to go through there for this purpose even without Nipuach, even without blowing as he's going. But by the way, because it's only Dirabanan, he's going for a purpose of a mitzvah like to be Matar, to make a Bechor Mutter, or to judge a Din Torah, or what have you. However, again, as the Mishnah is saying, he's going to become Tomei, Midirabanan, and therefore he has to be reimbursed for the truma that he could have eaten. But Tosfos says then that what it mentions then about this menakeach adam beis hapras v'holech is a separate statement. By the way, while we're mentioning this concept that a beta pras, going to Rabbanan. So by the way, you should know that in general there is a way to go through a beta pras without becoming tame, namely by blowing as you go. In other words, according to Rashi, the point is the Kohen, when he's going over here to be master of this Bechor, has to blow as he's going along, and still he's Tomei Midrabanan, in case he missed a piece. According to Tosfos, he doesn't have to blow. He is Tomei Midrabanan. If he wants to blow, then he could, and then the Pashtus, he wouldn't become Tomei. And another din that we see because of the fact that a Beis HaPras is Dirabanan, Rav Yehuda Bar Ami Meshmei Rav Yehuda Amar, Beis HaPras Shenidash Tahar. If a Beis HaPras was trampled, if you had a lot of people walk through it and trampled it, then it's Tahar, because inevitably then any piece of bone the size of a barley grain will have been crushed into smaller fragments than that, and once it's smaller than a barley grain, it's not metameh anymore. Yeah, but the point is, if you have enough people treading around and stomping around and treading around in this field, then
okay. Better apply to something like, you know, outfits or...
So it's a good question. I mean, you have a lot of people who visited there over the years. Could be. I don't know. I don't know. I guess if a Kohen wants to visit those places, you should ask a Shaila first. Okay. Fine. So that all that is one answer. All that is one way then that we can have this Kohen is allowed to walk in a place that's going to make him Tomei, but nevertheless he still becomes Tomei and gets compensated for the truma that he could have eaten, is because we're talking about he walks through a base of fast.
How long does he stay Tomei?
Like when he's Tomei Mester Aiser, a week. So he has to be sprinkled with Chol Adrom of water on the third day and on the seventh day, and then he told you it was on the seventh day and has a head of Shemesh, and then he's Tomei. Okay, inami, or another possibility, b'shar tumas, you could say, very simple, we're not talking about tumas mess at all, we're talking about the way to get to this b'chur involves that the Kohen is going to become tumi with some other kind of tumah, deloy mazer alaya, where the Kohen does not have any iser of becoming tumi with any other tumah other than tumas mess. So you can have, let's say, for example, that the road happens to pass by a place where inevitably, as he's going to check the b'chur, let's say, inevitably he's going to have to brush by a dead animal and he's going to become tumi from touching the nevela. So a Kohen's allowed to do that, but nevertheless, the fact is, for that next day, so he told me, and he can't eat truma. So that's another way.
A sheriff,
same thing, also only one day. Sheriff, Zayla, yeah, and yeah.
Truma's
meta set. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Hoyez Zokin, we said if the person that you ask to check the Bechor or do the Din Torah or what have you is old, Ma'kivay al-Hamar, we said you're allowed to give him a ride on a donkey. That's not paying him because that's making it possible for him to travel. And the Mishnah had said that you pay him kapoil. You pay him like a worker. So what does that mean? Tana, we learn in advice that means kapoil bottle, like an unemployed worker. I'm going to buy a kapoil bottle, shall oisa malacha. It means like an unemployed worker of that kind of work. So what does that mean? Rashi learns like this. It means, we have to first of all look, what is this guy's regular job? This guy who you're asking to check the Bechor or judge the Din Torah or what have you, what's his regular job? Let's say, for example, so Rashi says, suppose, for example, that his regular day job is he pierces pearls to be able to swing them on a necklace. So that kind of thing is relatively easy work and it's very high pay. So now, if somebody were to tell him, we'll pay you X amount and you'll take off from work today. There's not very much. You don't have to pay him very much for. Well, because it's an easy job. No, just the opposite. Sorry, any purchase mischora el dover more. So you only deduct a little bit from a salary. Shiren no yichal because it's an easy work. And there's not that much kircha in it. So therefore, in other words, so. That's the point. He gets it's a good paying job and it's a fairly easy job. No, but the point is, in other words, that because it's easy and there's not much kircha in it, right? So that's the point. In other words, so therefore, like you're not going to pay him very much. Any purchase miskora el dover more, Rashi says, you're only going to reduce a little. You're going to pay him only a little bit less than he would have otherwise made if he makes such a job $100 a day. So for him to take off a day of work, he would charge, let's say, $95 to do that, because there's no incentive to him to do that for a small amount of money, because why should I? Exactly, that's the point. That's what it means. On the other hand, Rashi continues, let's say, for example, his usual job is a hard job, let's say he's a carpenter, and somebody would say to him, usually you charge 3 zuzim a day, but instead I'll pay you a zuz and you'll take off work from that and do this other thing for me. Fine, for him that's worthwhile, because this way he's getting out of doing a very hard job. So it depends, Rashi says. So therefore, when we say over here, kapoyo bottle for oitha malacha, Rashi learns what it means is, in other words, you figure out what would he normally get for his regular day job, for the regular job that he would be doing during this time, what's his usual salary for that. Like this, you're not paying him that entire amount, so the fact is you're having him do something much easier. You're having him checking a bechor, or judge a dintur, or whatever.
Much more, much better pay than what he would do. Get doing this.
That's the thing. That's what Rashi is saying. The example of the person who pierces pearls, where let's say his normal salary, let's say, is $100 a day. So right, therefore, for what would you have to pay him in order to take off work? In order, even, forget about checking a bechor. Let's say you said to him, I want you to be off work the next day, and I'll pay you to take a day off work. How much will you? He would charge 90 or 95 or whatever dollars, right? So it depends how easy the work is. So you have to look at how easy versus hard it is, and then figure out how much it pays. So if it's a hard job, then he's willing to take a much lesser pay in order to take a day off it. And if it's an easier job, then
checking a bechor is much more difficult than putting pearls.
Not really.
Well, you just go, but you have to go over a damn gut.
Okay, fine. But the fact of the matter is that it's still not such a malacha kosher. It's still, I mean, it's one animal putting it down. Fine, it's still not. It's tircha. Fine, but still, okay, the fact that you'll charge only four or six for it, so it's still, you know, it's not something that pays a lot.
No, okay.
The point being, in other words, well, the Chachamim decided that's a fair wage for this. So the point being, in other words, Rashi says, the last line of Rashi Sharei, Eina Osikum, Lach Kosha Eslai, because the person he's getting to check the Bechor, judge the Jintur, is not doing such a hard job. So therefore, so you're not paying...
logic. If the job is simple and pays a lot, why would he have an incentive to do something that doesn't pay and is much harder to do?
Well, that's the thing. You would have to pay him close to his regular salary, but not quite. Still, even if a person has an easy job, he would still once in a while like a day off and do something else. The difference is if it's an easy job if it's an easy job, you need to pay him much more closer to his daily wage in order for him to be willing to take off.
His regular job is easy.
If his regular job is easy, that's what we're saying.
Right.
On the other hand, if his regular job is hard, then you can get away with paying him much less.
Rashi.
Okay, that's how Rashi learns.
Right.
That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos gets into a long discussion about that, but that's not necessarily what it means. And Tosfos discusses that you have a few other places in Shas where it also uses the expression kapoil or kapoil bottle, and you have different meanings in those places of what it means exactly. So Tosfos talks about that what it might mean is the other way around. It might mean like if a person is out of work, for example, and he wants a job, he's willing to take a pay cut in order to get some kind of job. Okay, so then that's the point. Though. So kapoyot bottle shall oyse malacha. So that could be another meaning of it. That it means, in other words, So in other words, you don't have to pay him the full amount that you would usually pay a worker to do such a job. You pay him
more.
So he's not working, right? So you have a few different, and then within that, you have a few explanations of achronim, what exactly the parameters of it are. Okay, the bottom line is you're paying him basically the opportunity cost. The fact that
he's putting... wait a minute. There's 2 miles away, someone who's checking cars, he paid this amount, and you're going to pay me this amount.
That person, let's say, it's a full-time job for him, like it was with Ila, so therefore he's entitled to charge. You're doing it only as a one-time thing, as a one-off thing, so therefore you're only entitled to compare a bottle of shalais and all right. Okay. All right. Mishnah says, if somebody is suspect about b'chores. Now, what does that mean, suspect about b'chores? Rashi says it means that he's suspect of making a mum in a b'chor. Which would mean basically that we're talking about, Shitim Kabbasis adds the word, actually that we're talking about a koyin. Given that the koyin is going to be able to shech and eat the bechor once it has a mum, so suppose you have a person who's suspect of doing just that, that he'll take the bechor and deliberately make a mum in it in order to be able to shech and eat it. It is a big affair. Although it's interesting, the Maharit al-Ghazi points out, it does not mean that he's choshered to take the bechor and shech it when it's a tum, because that's something that would be chayav koris. That's a shech in kodesh b'chutz. And we're not talking about somebody who's choshered to that. Yeah. You want to be able to eat the meat rather than raising it indefinitely. Yeah. So, okay, so suppose you have such a person who's choshered on that. There's a different explanation that someone
higher currents if he sheds it.
If it's a tum, if he calls them mum, it's a lot. So yeah. To do something that's high of chorus, he's not necessarily going to do. We're not talking about that. But we're talking about somebody who's saying, okay, it's only a lava, you know, big deal. So, yeah, there's a different explanation, actually, that a choshed ala b'chorus, some of them, of course, explain that choshed ala b'chorus means that he's suspect that, fine, the animal developed a mum naturally. But then we're going to learn in the next perek that you have rules about what you're allowed and not allowed to do with the meat of the b'chor. You're allowed to sell it, for example, but only under certain conditions and so forth. So he, let's say he doesn't do that. He goes and he's suspect of taking meat of a b'chor, b'chor ba'al mum, that is, which was properly shechted, and going and selling it as if it was chulin, and therefore people don't realize that it's chulin, and people don't realize that it's a b'chor, and then he charges more for it, and they don't treat it with special b'chor.
If he shechts a tom,
that's chayav karet. That's chayav karet, yeah. That's what Maharid Al-Ghazi says, we're not talking about that. So we're talking, again, either according to Rashi, we're talking about that he's kosher to make a mumin of b'chor, or according to some of the other mafarshim that he's, I think, Rambam learned this way, for example, that it means that he's kosher to sell the meat of a b'chor as if it was chulin.
Why we judge more lenient the causing a mumin of b'chor that's a tom, then
because the fact of the matter is, if it's a tom, then it was meant to be brought on, it was meant to be brought on the carbon, so therefore
it was a tom.
Okay, so if it was a tom, it was meant to be brought to the carbon, and as long as it's a tom. Okay, so then fine. You say I have a lab on that. Kol mum la'yi, boy. But nevertheless, it's actually in this week's parasha. But nevertheless, it's only a lab. Fine. Malchus will get for it. He's not going to get tarsus for it. Okay. So somebody who's kosher like that, ein lo'chin med besar tzvoyim, so you're not allowed to buy from him even meat of deer. Why not? We'll see in the Gemara. So in other words, not needless to say you can't buy from him meat of domestic animals, because they might be from a b'chor that he made a mumin or whatever. But no, not chayit. We're talking about meat. But we're talking about even, for example, you can't buy from him meat of deer. You know, you would think, what's the problem? Deer or don't have the din of b'chor. What would be the problem? So we'll see in the Gemara why you can't do that. V'loy oris she'en avudin, also you can't buy from him untanned, unworked skins. Because then, again, it might be a skin from a b'chor, which, again, either he made a mum in it, or he's shechting it and then selling it as if it was holding.
But it's a line of, can you recognize it from a...
That's what we're going to say in the Gemara. The reason is because it's very easily confused with meat from cows, and therefore it's not so obvious. People are not going to... He may try to get away with it, basically. Yeah, he may try to substitute, and then, yeah. Rabbi Eliezer says that you're allowed, that's by the way, that's Choshed Al B'Choros, that is how Rambam learned it, that it means that he's Choshed Al B'Choros from Moichor and L'Shem Cholim, that he sells them as if they were Cholim. Okay, anyway, you're not allowed to buy from him meat, you're not allowed to buy from him deer meat, or untanned skins. Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed to buy from him skins of females, because a female can't be a B'Chor. So therefore, there's obviously can't come from a B'Chor.
Well, you could substitute.
No, not substitute, but we'll see in the Gemara why the Chachamim disagree. The Ein Lochin Men of Semer Meluban, you're also not allowed to buy from him bleached wool, because again, that could have come from a Bechor, Vitsoi, or unbleached, uncleaned wool. Have a Lochin Men of Togui, but you're allowed to buy from him spun wool over Gadim or clothing that's made out of wool. We'll see in the Gemara. Let's go in the Gemara and we'll see the reasons for all these things. Okay. So first of all, why Besar Tzvoyim? Why are you not allowed to buy from him deer meat? Or Tzvoyim could be gazelles, whatever, anyway.
Wild animals.
Yeah, well, certain kind, yeah. The reason is the mechlof vide'egla, because it can easily be confused with meat. The mechlof vide'egla, because it can easily be confused with meat from a calf. They're not so visibly different, and therefore he might take meat from a calf that was a b'chor and pass it off as meat from deer. And the loy odus she'enim avudim, we're saying you're not allowed to buy from him skins that were not tanned, implying ha avudim zavinan, but if he already tanned it and made it into leather or parchment or whatever, you are allowed to buy from him. What's the logic? Because im isa de b'chor hava, because if in fact it came from a b'chor, loy hava torah, he wouldn't go to the trouble of tanning it Savar, because you would figure, Ishomi Beirabbanan, if the Rabbanan, if the local Chachamim hear that this actually came from a Bechor, and it was originally a Tam, and it was supposed to, and I made a Mumanist, or whatever, Mopsid, let me know, they're going to take it away from me, and they're going to force me to bury it. So therefore, Rashi learns, in other words, that he's Mopsid on his Kircha. So he knows, in other words, that there, it's a great deal of trouble, it's a tan leather to make it into parchment, or what have you. So he's not going to bother because why should I when I'm taking the risk that then the Rabbanon might end up making me lose the whole thing?
Oh, that's
basically, yeah. And then Amnon says similarly that the Shemud Yishmu or Dayanim, the Iknesuhu Kifi Risha, because the Dayanim might hear about it and penalize him according to his Risha. So therefore, in other words, he's afraid to take that chance. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a loyfim men Otis Shalmakeva. Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed to buy from him a skin of a female. My timer, so why is that maybe a deer? Because it's very obvious. You can see the difference between a male skin has the relevant organs in it and a female skin does not.
You see the skin and not the
animal. No, but even if you see the skin, for example, you have this place in the Sefer Kalim, for example, it mentions where they would take sometimes, we learned in Cholim, we talked about the various ways of skinning an animal. We learned in Harav Arotev, and one of them was you skin it in such a way that you can make a water skin out of it. You skin it in such a way, instead of cutting down the middle as you usually do, you like peel it off the animal in such a way that it stays intact all around, and then you're able to make it into a water skin. And you have a Mishnah in Kalim, for example, that mentions where you have such a water skin, and you have the little pouches over there where the testicles of the animal were, which also...
That's fine, but
okay.
It's not there.
So therefore, if they're not there, no, we're talking about obviously a whole skin, where that would be recognizable. So therefore, so the says, no problem. If you see the little pouches over there for the testicles, you know it was from a male. If not, then not. The Tanakama, what does the Tanakama answer to that? He says, in Cain, if you allow him to do that, Zochonami, he may take the skin of a male, which might have been a Bechor, Chayekwezis Grosein, or cut out the area where the male organs were, V'omer, and he'll claim Achbor and Machlua. He'll say, okay, he might say that. So he's going to claim that it came from a female. Why is there a hole there? Why is there a hole there? Because mice ate it. The Idach, where's Rabbi Eliezer? What answer? Be'ach barim nedi yediyah. Where mice eat from a skin, where mice bite into a skin, you can tell the difference between whether...
They do bite from skin?
Yeah, they could, I guess. But you can tell the difference between where they gnawed on a skin versus where it was cut deliberately.
Right.
Yeah, it's like jagged or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The halacha is like a chacham, so therefore you're not allowed to buy a skin of a female either. We said in the Mishnah, "Ein loyfim men of semen melubon mitzori," from this person who's suspect about the bechor, again, either of making a muminit or of selling it as holin.
Yeah, also what I am.
It's supposed to be ve'ein loyfim men of semen melubon mitzori. You're not allowed to buy from him. We said wool that's bleached or wool that's still unbleached. So you must say, why does it mention both? Hashtag semen melubon loyfim. And if you're not even allowed to buy from him after it's bleached, because he figures now before we said about the skin. And he said he's not going to bother tanning it unless it really doesn't come from a Bechor, because he's afraid the Chacham will find out and make him lose the whole thing. But you could argue with bleaching wool. You could argue that bleaching wool is not as much of a tircha. So therefore, he doesn't... It's a little bit, but it's not so much that he's not willing to take a chance. There is enough bang for the buck. So you say you can't even buy from him wool that's bleached. So you mean, boy, how much more so you can't buy from him when it's unbleached? Why does the Mishnah have to mention unbleached wool? The answer is, if you can't buy even bleached, how much more so unbleached? The answer is, El Chodikatani. Right, what the Mishnah means, it's not saying two separate cases, it's mentioned. What?
Unbleached is no tikh.
That's the point. So of course you can't buy from him, because, yeah, what's...
So why did one take Kama Chaimer?
That's the point. In other words, if even bleached wool, where there's a tikh, he might be willing to take that chance, because even if the Rabbanim take it away from him, big deal, he didn't put that much time or effort into it.
Yeah, how much more so
when there's no tikh? All right.
Okay.
So the answer is, El Chodeh Katani, Semer Melubon Mitzayos. So you're right. What the Mishnah means, the Mishnah is telling us one statement, that you're not allowed to buy from him wool that was bleached from its dirtiness. Which means, Rabbeinu Gershom says, what that means is you're not allowed to buy from him wool that's completely bleached or partially bleached. Rashi seems to learn not like that. It means in other words, the mission is, when the Mishnah says, semer melubon b'tsoi, it's not two different cases, semer melubon from its tsoi. Semer that was bleached from its tsoi, you're not allowed to buy from him. But you would be allowed to buy from him you certainly wouldn't be allowed to buy from him unbleached wool. But the Mishnah doesn't need to say that because there's no fit.
And so what
semer melubon meets soy also. When it's 10 nanometer, would mean bleached, would mean bleached wool.
And that you're allowed
to. So you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to.
So why do they have to just walk by with your
job? That's the thing. So that's why Rabbeinu Gershom explains. Semim Lubin to say also means that it's not completely bleached. In other words, it sounds like according to Rabbeinu Gershom, if it's completely bleached, it sounds like you would be allowed to.
Yeah.
Because then already there's a neftircha in it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, most of the other mafoshim don't make that distinction, so it seems that they don't accept that. It's just, okay, semim Lubin mitzoy also. It just means wool is bleached from its soya. It's right. Fine.
What's the answer?
The halacha is that the Rambam doesn't make that distinction, and I don't think Shulchan Aruch does either. That no, you're not allowed to buy from him whether it's bleached or whether it's not. Partially, completely. But the Mishnah continued, you're allowed to buy from him wool that was spun into thread or clothing. So you have to ask the same question. If you're even allowed to buy from him spun thread, because already there's enough tircha in there that he's not willing to take the chance, unless it really doesn't come from the fur, the godim in boya, how much more so clothing, where there's even more tircha involved. Plus, also, Rashi said, never mind the chair. So once they were made into thread already, they're mutter. Then obviously, then they're mutter later on when you take that thread and make it into clothing.
Why is it mutter?
Because we said already, one thread, there's so much tircha involved in making it, spinning in the thread,
so
that he's not going to... No, we're saying that this person who's choshud is not going to go and take wool from a bechor and make it into an enmei, that he made a mumen, or that he's claiming to be a chulin or whatever, because he has the stands to lose a lot.
Right.
But so if you're allowed to buy from him spun thread, how much more so you're allowed to buy from him clothing, which are made from the same spun thread? The answer is, my begodim namti. What does the Mishnah mean? When it says you can buy clothing from him, it means felt. Felt is not spun. It's just pressed together.
Pressed, yeah.
Yeah, that's the point. So
what
even
that's
so you take fibers and you press them together.
Fibers
are different things. It can be wool, it can be linen, it can be fur or whatever, and you press it. But then the point is, there's no spinning involved, so you would think maybe it would be also, but no, the Mishnah is saying it's allowed also. Okay. The Mishnah continues, similarly, if somebody is suspect about Shavuos, either, again, there could be two possibilities. One, that he's suspect of planting during Shemitah, which you're not allowed to do, or the other is that he takes the aftergrowth, he takes the things that grow on their own during Shemitah, and he sells them, which you're also not allowed to do. So, if he plants, he's over on a lot. Yeah, either way, he's over on a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, ain't pishdan. So you're not allowed to buy from him flax, vafilu srak, even if it is combed out, because again, with combing, there's not that much of a tircha, and therefore you might take the chance. Aval loyshman togui v'orig, but you would be allowed to buy from such a person spun thread, because there's more of a tircha. Or woven linen garments. Why is it that you're not allowed to buy from him? Why is it you're not allowed to buy from him flax? By the way, on the face of it, flax. What's the problem? You don't eat it. So Yerushalmi actually talks about it. One
flax, don't you?
No. So on the face of it, why would we suspect if we learn that the problem is that he's taking spichim and selling them, so what's the problem with flax? You know, you don't eat it anyway. So the Yerushalmi mentions one point is there's flax seed after all that's edible. So therefore, that's a reason to be choshed in.
Black
seed is edible, yeah. The other reason is, yeah, you can find it healthy.
It's still going to be extracted, doesn't it?
That's still okay. The point is, though, in other words, that once he's suspect of taking sphichim, of taking aftergrowth and selling them, then we're suspecting that he might do the same thing with flax and flax seed. The other explanation, the Yerushalmi says, is okay, once we suspect him, then we suspect him across the board. Rashi, who says over here that the problem is he may have planted, would agree with that explanation. Yes, he's planting. He might be planting flax. Okay.
Someone like that would not be qualifying as an Eidim, as an Eidim.
Yeah, well, that's true also. That's true also in Sanhedrin. We learned about that, yeah. But here we're not talking about that. Here we're talking about what kind of business you're allowed to do with him. Okay. So, again, the question is, why does the Mishnah have to say that you can buy from him thread that's spun or woven clothing? Same question as before. Hashta tovi the meaning. If you're even allowed to buy from him spun linen thread, orig miboya, how much more so that you can buy from him woven clothing, because the clothing is already woven from the same thread, which is already mutter. And the answer is, similar to before, my ori tiki. What do we mean by woven? We don't mean something that's actually woven shefti to erev. We mean like fringes or tassels or something. So they're not... shefti to erev, there's no chiddush in it. Obviously, you're allowed to, because if you're even allowed to buy the thread, you're obviously allowed to buy clothing that was made, that was woven from that thread. But the point is, you're even allowed to buy from him fringes that are made. Rashi described they take flax after it was combed, but before it was spun, and they make these kinds of fringes or tassels out of it. That kind of thing you're also allowed to buy from him. Because, again, NASA's a lot of truth involved in making, and he wouldn't take that chance because he knows that Abana might find out.
If they find out, he's going to
lose out, right? They're going to penalize him. Mishnah says, "Hachoshed liyos moicher truma l'shem cholin." If a person is suspect that he takes truma and sells it as if it was cholin, which of course is misleading, that zorim will eat it, koyin more, tami will eat it, and so forth. Ein moicher men after the mayim melach. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says you're not even allowed to buy from him water or salt.
Why is that?
Because of a knas, Rashi says. And by the way, Mefarshim asked the question. So why before, with the guy was suspect about bechoris, why did we say that you can't? But we said you can't buy from him beauty, but you can buy from him water or salt. What's the difference? One reason is because it's much more common to take the truma is much more easily available and much more common, and it's much more likely that somebody is going to do that. No, it's much more likely that somebody is going to do the wrong thing and sell truma l'shem cholin, much more so than it's likely that he's going to take a bechor and make a mum in it or sell it as cholin, because bechoras are somewhat less common than truma anyway. You only have one bechor from every female animal, whereas truma, yeah. No, actually the next Mishnah is going to talk about that. There's different levels of being kosher. Yeah, we'll see in the next Mishnah, but we'll get to that tomorrow, right, Shem? Yeah, okay. Dibir of Yehuda. No, that we said that before. We said that we meant fringes of yeah. So now we're up to the next Mishnah. If somebody is suspect of selling truma, claiming that it's cholin, ein loshkemen after the mayim melach divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says you're not even allowed to buy from him water or salt,
right,
even though those have nothing to do with truma because of a knas. Rabbi Shimon says no, it's not quite so stringent. Kol sheyesh bo zikas truma or ma'aser, it's anything that has a connection to truma or ma'aser, basically anything that you give truma or ma'aser from, ein loshkemen many, you're not allowed to buy from such a person, but you're allowed to buy other things like water or salt.
Anything matzah behema, things like that.
Well, anything that you take truma and ma'aser from. But for example, no, truma and ma'aser meaning ma'aser produce. But for example, you'd be allowed to buy from him. You'd be allowed to buy from an animal, cattle. You'd be allowed to buy from him. That's a different thing. Again, ma'aser. Okay, so maybe. Okay, fine. Maybe. But okay. First of all, even if he doesn't, even if you don't give ma'aser behema, the animals are not also bana. The animals are not also to eat if you don't take ma'aser behema from them. As opposed to produce that you don't take ma'aser from is also key. So there is a
difference. Animals are not aser bana if you don't count.
Right. If you don't take ma'aser, you've been over on a mitzvah saseh, but the animals are more to key. Okay. Anyway, so Moses last 3 of my, when Rav Shimon says anything that has a connection to truma and ma'aser, what is he including with that? The answer is last 3 kuvei dogim d'ma'avi b'hu shemen zayis. It comes to include fish eggs or fish guts, which they commonly mix olive oil in them. Now, olive oil is something that you have to take truma from. So therefore, if he was selling just the fish eggs by themselves, you would be allowed to. But since oil is commonly mixed in with them, and this guy is suspect of taking truma as selling as cholin, then you're not allowed to buy those fish eggs from him. So Gemara tells a case. There was a certain butcher, a certain shochet. The avachoshur was a buni tarba de atma. He was suspect of that he was selling fat from the kidneys and from the hind legs of the animal, which we learned in Cholin is also the mar decanter instead of the becheskas of fat from the canter, which is from the small intestine where the fat over there is kosher.
Why doesn't it say shemen normally?
Because tarba is the Aramaic word for fat.
Chelav,
yeah. So he was taking chelav or shuman, whatever. He was taking fat. He was taking fat, which is osur, and selling it, claiming that it was fat from the kanta, which is mutter. Can say Rava was abuni after the amguzi. So Rava penalized him and forbade him from selling even nuts. Now, why should there be a problem with nuts? Amalei a popular Rava. So a papa asked Rava, why are you not allowing him to sell nuts? Kiman Kirav Yehuda. Who are you going like? Was it Yehuda in our Mishnah with this guy with truma where you're not even allowing him to sell water or salt? The same thing over here. This guy is only kosher on chaylev. Why are you not allowing him to sell nuts? Well, Kirav Yehuda. And if you're going like Rav Yehuda, after the Mayim Melach Nami, then don't allow him to sell water or salt either. It sounds like you're not allowing him to sell fat or meat or whatever, but you're allowing, and nuts, but the water or salt is fine. So if you're going according to Rav Yehuda, everything should be osur. If you're going according to Rav Shimon, only things that are directly related to what he's selling, so should be a problem. So the answer is L'olam Rav Shimon. Actually, Rav's fact is in accordance with Rav Shimon, which is actually the halacha. What it is ubi sura de gufe kansinimai. However, what Rav is doing is he's penalizing him with something that's involved that he actually used for the isser that he was doing. How so? How did he use nuts in doing his isser? Stam daudiki goru bam guzi, because kids in general like nuts. So therefore, so what this guy was doing is he was going and misleading the sons of other local kosher butchers and offering them nuts. He's getting them to come to him. He's enticing them with nuts. That they should bring him fat from the kidneys from their father's butcher shop. And then Umaz bin Leib married a Tanta, and then he would sell it, claiming that it was Tanta fat with his mother. So the nuts, so when Rava is forbidding him to sell nuts, that's because he was actually using nuts as part of his scheme, because he was getting the kids to, I'll give you nuts if you go and bring me this chela from your father's butcher shop. And then he would sell this chela, which is also as if it was Shulman, and say that it was Shulman, which is mother. So the halacha is like Rav Shimon. You only ask the person to sell something that's directly related to what he did. So in the case of Truma in our Mishnah, you don't allow him, for example, to sell fish eggs because those are mixed with olive oil. But for example, he could sell, let's say, milk or eggs or water or salt or whatever. No, because Truma doesn't have to do with any of those things.
No, but I mean, you could exchange the milk.
No, we're not worried about exchanging already. The point is that over here specifically, he would give the kids nuts in order for that. But in a normal case, when a person doesn't need kids to carry out a scheme, he's not necessarily exchanging one thing for another. Yeah. Okay, so that's how it is. So yeah, the next Mishnah is going to talk about more generally when someone is choshered on one issue, when do we say that he is and isn't choshered on the other issue. And then the discussion of that will bring us to the end of the title.
Very applicable, very important.